How many times while you have been manscaping have you nicked or nearly trimmed off your wiener schnitzel in the twins? Hey, I'm Christy, and with 30 years experience teaching men how to thin out their forest in their yonder region, I am so excited to tell you about this revolutionary lawn mower 3.0. The ceramic blades prevent the manscaping accidents that leave you unable to use your most favorite appendage. Oh, and gentlemen, it also keeps a 90-minute charge for those of you that haven't trimmed in quite a while. You'll need every second of that 90 minutes. Let's be real, though. No one, especially your significant other, wants to have to weed through your overgrown forest to find their favorite play toy. So order now at manscaped.com and enter the promo code podcast20 and receive 20% off plus free shipping. Serious, bushy man. Order now.
Welcome to the Sports Talk Garage Podcast, where we discuss and debate the latest news and hot takes from the court and the ball fields to the locker room and front office. We are four lifelong friends who grew up with a love of professional and collegiate sports. Today we are bankers, investors, professors, and entrepreneurs, but our love of sports has never changed. Come listen for the fun, gain some insight, and probably a few laughs as we give you our perspective on those oversized contracts, game-winning scores, and franchise players. This is the Sports Talk Garage.
All right, welcome back to another episode of the Sports Talk Garage Podcast. We are in Season 2, Episode 35. This is your host, David, joined to be with Matt tonight. John is taking the night off. We are still moving on. We're happy to be back. As you know, we hope everybody is staying safe and healthy with everything going on in the world. And even though sports have taken somewhat of a hiatus, we're still happy to continue on with interviewing different people who work in and around the sports industry. And we're going to move on with that tonight. We're happy to have on S.J. Toohey, current Liberty University football staff member, assistant athletic director, and director of operations. Thanks for joining us tonight, S.J.
Yeah, man, thanks for having me.
We're thrilled to have you on. So football operations, pretty cool gig off the field. Obviously, you've done that with Arkansas and also a little bit of work at SMU after your playing days. So you can kind of tell us, you know, what your current role is with the team, you know, what your responsibilities are and what your day-to-day looks like.
Yeah, the day-to-day certainly shifted a little bit. Like you said, I'm our DFO, Director of Football Operations, our assistant AD for football, I guess is the full title. It's kind of an administrative overseeing of football budgets and travel and logistics, pretty much anything without a headset that involves a point A to point B or a dollar amount comes through. My office, and we have a good support staff, player development, and guys that work in operations with me that make it a little easier. So football ops is kind of a weird deal. It's really expanded in the last, decade or so as football staffs have grown. I think what used to be done probably more of an admin side is now internal. Yeah. So it's a cool field to be in, even though it's a weird time to be in.
Certainly
it.
Is. Since you did mention office, let's talk about the physical office just briefly. I saw a virtual tour of the new building. What are your thoughts on the new Liberty Football Center?
It's really nice, man. I came at a good time. Started in, I think, February, and we had about 1 month to go until we moved into the building. So we were still working out of the suites of the stadium when I got there, and they'd been doing that for like a year and a half, and everyone's complaining about it. I'm like, guys, come on, man. We can get in this new thing. It's only a month away. We got it. So. Yeah, good time to join staff, and of course the new building opens up just in time to not be
certainly.
In it. But that's
okay. Right. Well, just kind of looking, working with Coach Hugh Freeze, who you've known for a while now, as you're still kind of getting used to Lynchburg and the football team, what are your, I guess internally, what are your thoughts of the progression of the team over the next maybe 2 to 5 years under Hugh Freeze?
Sure. Well, I mean, Coach Freeze, man, he's a winner. And kids like to play for him. So. I think that's what enticed me to come out here is I knew he was going to build a good program. And, the jump even from year one last year being bowl eligible and our first, attempt at doing that. So he's already made a bunch of strides, but I swear that we have a long way to go. I think that the seniors we recruit right now, I don't know them super well yet. But, I mean, even those guys were recruited not to play at the level they're playing at now. A lot of them are playing over their heads and playing really hard and got a lot better. It seems, again, I'm looking outside looking in a little bit being new. So I think that the more he gets his recruiting classes in here, mixed with the current guys we have, you're going to keep seeing improvement. The more guys are learning his offense, it was obviously very intricate with all the RPOs that he does. So I think that we have a lot of improvement to do, which is good, because I think we've already come a long way.
Wow. So SJ, you know, for some of the folks that don't know you as well, I mean, Dave and I have talked a little bit about, I guess, call it your pedigree. Your grandfather was a well-respected high school basketball coach in Louisiana. Your father was drafted by the Cincinnati Reds right out of high school, but ended up playing basketball at University of Mississippi and ends up holding the all-time assist leader in the SEC, and then gets drafted to the New Jersey Nets, but still ended up deciding to play overseas. And then when he comes back, he ends up being a broadcaster for the Memphis Grizzlies and a radio analyst for Ole Miss. I promise I'm going somewhere with this. So with so much of your family's history revolving around sports, did you kind of have the passion coming into this to work in the industry from a young age, or is that something that came kind of later as you grew through this?
I don't know, man. I mean, I would like to tell you I always, you know, grew up wanting to be a football ops guy. That's not true. I mean, this time 5 years ago, I'm finishing, you know, playing basketball at Loyola, and I never even thought about how to fill a spiral, none less working in football. So, yeah, I think as a kid, I thought I would work in sports, the industry, because, you know, we were a meathead family. That's all I knew. You know, my sister played sports, my brother played sports. You know, my dad worked in it and was always around it. And so I didn't know any better. I don't know if I wanted to be a journalist or if I wanted to, you know, I would like to get into athletic admin. That's my goal, is to be an AD somewhere. And so this is kind of the route that got opened up and that I got lucky enough to fall into. But no, I was too stupid to know any better. I think I always thought I wanted to work in sports. I just had no idea where that path was until it was there.
Awesome. Well, you mentioned Loyola. So growing up in Tennessee, how did you make the move to Maryland for college basketball?
Yeah, so the recruiting process obviously has been so nationalized now because of social media and all that crap that we deal with working in college sports. So, you know, I liked Maryland. My brother played for the Ravens at the time, and so I was already in Baltimore, you know, like every other weekend watching those games. So I liked the area. I started looking at some schools around there, and long story short, there's a connection at Loyola. So I sent some film in through a family friend who knew the coach, and he came down to watch me play and got offered a scholarship to play there. And really, I didn't – to be honest, I was at a Ravens game, and I kept getting ice thrown to the back of my head. Like, I kept getting hit from, like, the upper deck, the suite level. It was, like, throwing down to me in the seats. And finally turned around, and it's the Loyola basketball coach, which I'm pretty sure is an impermissible benefit, but he's no longer the coach there. So met him at the game, and then he called me. Like, I hadn't talked to him for 2 weeks later. He called me. One Saturday morning, we just played a high school football game. It was like 10:30, and he called me and asked if I was still sleeping. I think I was, and I was like, "No, sir, no, I'm up, I'm ready to go." Well, what's up? And he's like, "Well, like, you should be sleeping. You should have celebrated last night. You guys had a big win. Like, you should still be sleeping." And he said, "At Loyola, we don't do anything before." He said, "If we win, we don't do anything before 10 a.m. So you'll be good to go here." I'm like, "You know what? This is a guy that I can get behind. This is a guy I can play for." So took a visit, liked it a lot, and just fell in love with the school. It was a good school, man. I mean, I enjoyed playing basketball there, but Loyola was a cool little place.
Yeah. So you did something.
That was a long answer to that question. I apologize. That was a really short question.
Oh, no, but that's good. I mean, what high school kid doesn't want to sleep in sometimes? So, I mean, that's a good selling factor.
I'm
there.
Like, all right, if I win, I get to sleep in and party. That's
those 6 a.m. practices? That sounds like a good deal.
So the moral of the story here is you better win, period. Because we've all done the nasty 5:30 a.m. college workouts, and that's always.
Hey, that's how Coach – I don't know if you guys know Jimmy Patsos. He's worth a podcast or two probably. But, I mean, that's how it was in college. My freshman year when he was our coach, we were playing the game, and we were much more concerned with the outcome of the game because of how practice was going to be the next day than we were actually – win the game. If we lost, it wasn't like, oh man, we lost Iona. I was like, oh gosh, man, we have to run so much tomorrow. It's gonna be terrible. And if we won, it was gonna be the easiest practice in the world. So that's how we play.
Hey, it's a good motivation there. Well, you were able to do something not many people can say they had. You played college basketball and college football, two different universities. Can you tell us about that transition down to SMU for a year of football?
Sure. Yeah. So bad at basketball, I got to play football, which is good. It really was kind of a same thing, man. It was a lucky thing I fell into where I really wanted to play basketball somewhere, and I liked the Dallas area. I thought that if I was in a grad transfer, it was kind of a time where I got to actually pick, have a more informed decision where I wanted to go to school and what I wanted to do in life. So I liked the Dallas, like the business side of things there, and emailed a bunch of colleges around there and couldn't quite find a good basketball set up for me. And talked to Chad Morris, who I knew from his high school quarterback, Jevin Snead, played for Ole Miss the same time my brother was. So I met him there and then met him again in Destin, and kind of just a family connection we had. And got talking to him about it, and we started talking about football. And originally I thought it was a good SMU to play football and basketball. Larry Brown was a coach there, and he knew my granddad from New Orleans, the old New Orleans Buccaneers, I think ABA team. And it turned out Larry Brown wasn't the coach there. And as soon as the football season was over, I actually started working in football, which I did not plan on. So things fell into place again, but just a crazy coincidence. When we kind of worked out the football thing, I was like, well, wait, what position can I play? I was like, I don't know, man. We'll figure it out.
We'll just get you down here.
So I did and figured it out. And I was a really, really bad scout team defensive back and a decent holder. So that worked out.
So what was it like transferring from indoor air-conditioned court to full outdoor
in the heat? Yeah, just Dallas, Texas, it was summer, right? It's fine. I played football in high school. I played baseball in high school. So it wasn't too bad of a transition. And thankfully, I wasn't the one doing Oklahoma drill, you know, period two. I was over there with a specialist pretending like we were doing something. So it wasn't quite as bad for me. as it was probably some of the other guys, but it was tough. And Coach Morris would always tell us, I got more Chad Morrisisms than anyone, but he'd always tell us anyone can be an All-American when it's 72 and partly cloudy, boys. So when it was 104 degrees in Dallas, Texas, that's when real All-Americans were made.
Oh, yeah, my cousin coaches high school down at the D1 level in Austin, man, and I've talked to him about some of his practices and how all that goes and on the high school level. Oh my Lord. You know, Dave and I are both from Charlotte, so we were used to the 120 heat index and you know, you walk outside and humidity. You hit that humidity wall and you just go, oh, practice is gonna be fun today.
But yeah, no doubt.
Oh God.
Yeah. It's funny, at SMU it gets so hot. We didn't have an indoor, but the high school down the street did, Highland Park. So like we're over there using the high school facilities and it's raining and stuff, but I'm telling you, man, if it's 72 and partly cloudy, everybody can be an All American. So
that the truth. So I guess on a totally side note about you personally, you know, one of the things we found out, I guess, is that you're an avid piano player. True?
Man, avid is a bold word. I used to have to play it to, I had to play it to get dates, and now I have a girlfriend, so I've probably slowed down because of that. But I like to play piano. Man, it was a good outlet in college, just something different than, you know, the normal grind of being a meathead.
There you go. So just on that point, who are some of the favorite musicians that influenced you as you were learning?
Oh, dude, I love Billy Joel. Is like my favorite artist of all time. Watching
the Piano Man.
Watching him play at Madison Square Garden a couple years ago, I cried. So I like all that kind of stuff. My sister played too, so that was our rule growing up, is that we had to play an instrument to be able to play sports.
I like that.
Yeah, I will implement that with my kids as well. It was actually I hated it at the time, but ultimately it was a good decision.
Was there any specific pieces that you like to play now?
Man, growing up, you had to play all like the classical stuff. Now I just print off whatever sheet music of some popular, you know, if it's like A Star Is Born comes out, I want to learn that song. Or if it's, you know, whatever the newest, just obnoxious piano bar song is. if I'm playing stuff now, it's because it's fun and friends over and, you know, we're having a good time. But you know, again, at the time it was to get dates, so I was trying to learn all the sappy songs, and thankfully we're past that point now.
Well, looks like you put it to good use, which is awesome.
So. Yeah, exactly. And hey, look, when you're ugly and not getting enough minutes on the basketball court, you got to find other ways to make it happen. So
that's
David,
awesome.
You took a note out of your book.
Oh, yes, he did.
That's your move.
That was
Well, I didn't know, man. I wasn't trying to steal it. No one told me.
Oh, man. With the awesome music side note there, we're going to take a quick break. Forgive our sponsor, Spare Time, and we'll be back with all of you in just a moment. All right, and welcome back to Season 2, Episode 35. We have been chatting with S.J. Tuohy, Liberty University football staff member. Happy to have him on. So let's go ahead, hop back into a few more questions for him tonight. And SJ, a big question that's really on the minds of pretty much any sports fan right now is college football, the upcoming season. And with so much going on with, COVID-19, there's been a lot of projections looking at the potential of a full season, shortened season, teams maybe playing just conference games, no season, or even a delayed season starting in the spring. What do you think is going to happen, even though it's rather uncertain right now?
Yeah, man, I think anyone that tells you that they know what's going to happen is lying to you. We haven't got a ton of info from NCAA standpoint, just because I think they're trying to play it smart. I think they're trying to say, look, if you'd asked us a month ago what this thing would look like today, we would have got it way wrong. And I think now they want to kind of wait and see as we get close to summer what this thing looks like. And we all want to play games. I mean, everyone that's working the biz, we want to have jobs. We want to play games. The players want to play. It's what they came to school to do. So if we can do it safely, they'll find a way. Obviously, from a Liberty standpoint, we're not in the conference. So from our end, everyone's like, oh, let's play a conference schedule. I'm like, yeah, maybe we can think about that, but let's discuss other options too. So I could see that being the thing that happens, and we'll be fine. We'll figure out a schedule, but who knows, man? I think that we could play it as is, and we could not have a season altogether. None of those would surprise me. I think we just got to keep doing what's in the best interest of the kids, and we want to rush our kids back to campus and get them working out, because that's what they want to do. So we want to do it too. But ultimately, we got to make sure. And obviously, financially, our country is going through some stuff now too, where there's more important things than college football. But college football is also a big aspect of that financial burden for the NCAA and schools. So I'll be curious to see. I think that I'm optimistic about playing some games in some fashion, whether that's a shortened season or a spring season. But ultimately, the kids are, 18, 19, 20, 21-year-old kids. So whenever they tell us that to put the ball down and play, they'll figure it out. I think there's a lot of coaches who are worried about prep time and this stuff. And obviously, yeah, you gotta get the kids in some kind of shape, and you gotta, talk some plays. But at the end of the day, a 19-year-old, put the ball down, let's go play. So we'll see. I'm
Y'all
optimistic about it, but not certain.
didn't get spring ball in this year, right?
A
Shoot, no,
couple
we got,
practices.
yeah, like four, three or four practices in. But I'll
Right.
tell you,
So what?
the spring ball stuff, you could do with that. It's really the strength and conditioning stuff that I think is the biggest deal with those guys. If you can get them in the weight room for a couple weeks to get them ready, then that'd be go way farther than, because we're still meeting with the kids now. I mean, we're doing plays and installing playbooks. It's just getting them in shape.
Yeah, so with kids not being on campus, how are you kind of monitoring their strength and conditioning? Just are they sending videos in, doing some Zoom calls? Like, what's the protocol going?
If you hear a school doing that, send them to me, because it's against the rules, and we're going to turn them
Oh,
in.
okay.
No, I mean, there's it's all voluntary stuff now, so we can't directly monitor, so to speak, what they're doing. I mean, obviously, we can encourage them to do stuff, and if they have questions, Dom, our strength coach, can answer them. He's real involved with them, and he stays in touch every day, and he sent them workout packets to do. If, hey, this is a workout if you have weights, if you don't have weights, if you have a field, if you don't have a field. So we're doing the best we can with that. But ultimately, the kids have to want to do it. I think we have guys that are doing a good job. Now academically, we can stay on them pretty good, and we can make them do up to, I think, 8 hours a week of virtual meetings and chalk talk and that kind of stuff. But in terms of monitoring their Apple Watch workouts or something like that, we sadly can't do that, which is ultimately probably good for the kids in the long run, but frustrating for the strength coaches.
Definitely.
That's awesome. So, do you guys have some kind of like virtual login when they're working out? No, full push-ups, boys. No skimping.
Yeah, I would put my Fitbit on my dog and have her run around the backyard after 5 minutes.
There you go. I like that.
Fetch boy.
Exactly.
So, I understand you're currently pursuing a doctorate degree.
Trying to.
Trying.
Yeah, if we got a Liberty
So
professor
when you get
in
to finish.
this interview here, so hopefully I'm late on a paper. If you can email my professor and talk about maybe what the reasons are for that.
We'll see what we can do on that
Yeah,
one
I
for you.
appreciate that.
I think he's busy airing a podcast, don't you, Professor? I think so.
No doubt.
So when you get finished with that, do you want to stay in college football? Is there potential you'd like to go up to the NFL or go totally different?
Man, I'm really trying to live where my feet are, because that's a good question I don't have the answer to. I would like to not stay in college football forever. I really like college football. I love the guys that I've worked for. I like where I am now at Liberty, but I want to get that doctor to set myself up for maybe making a move to admin down the road. But like I said, 5 years ago, if you said, hey, you're going to be working football ops, I wouldn't have not even known what that was. So we'll see. I mean, I think that it's a leadership doctorate, so it helps me work as it is, I think, and it's also kind of an outlet to express some different thoughts and research some different things. So I think that either way, it'll be good. I would like to ultimately use it probably in an admin or an executive type role. I just don't know where that is exactly.
I would love to hear your dissertation when you get to that point. That sounds pretty awesome.
And I would too.
I mean, I really, the one I'm working on right now, it's interesting, is talking about the value of college football players. And, you know, everyone wants to make this pay for play argument. Should we pay him? Should we not pay him? How much should it be? But I think deeper than that, no one really understands an actual value of a player other than revenue and advertising dollars. That's what the argument it always is. But to make the argument correctly, you really should look at what those players mean to their communities. I mean, the Uber drivers, the bartenders, the hotel managers, and as well as the qualitative, I mean, church attendance. You know, at Arkansas, we won. All of a sudden, people are showing up to church you haven't seen in months, which we didn't do a whole lot of, so you didn't see them a lot at all. But in general, you know, the community spirits are lifted. I think we see that now with this virus more than ever, is that, I mean, the value they provide is a lot more than ticket sales and advertising, although that is the big piece of it. But I think we get that argument a little wrong. So that's what I'm working on now. It's been a long time coming, and I need to get back to it when this podcast is over. So I'm drinking caffeine as we speak.
I got to say, I love the topic, and the academic nerd in me is coming out. I actually want to read that when you're done, because that's very fascinating to me.
Well, it'll be boring when you read it, but it sounds better when you say it like that.
All right, man, you got a chance to record it on, you know, whatever your favorite social media aspect is and pass it along. We're happy to listen. But anyway, so I feel like we're remiss, and I'm sure you've had all these questions 1,000 times, but The Blind Side, the movie, right?
Sure.
When it comes to you personally, how did it kind of impact you? I mean, you lived it for real, but this has your family all the way out in the public's eye, and hopefully it's been far enough since you've really been interviewed on this. It brings back some good memories, but you know, how does this affect you?
Man, I get to do podcasts now and stuff like that, which is nice. Other than that, no, I mean, I don't know. It's, everyone always asks, you know, has it changed your life? I'm like, yeah, obviously. I mean, you know, if anyone's in a position to ask me a question, they've obviously know how it's changed my life in some aspect, because I'm getting interviewed, or I'm doing this or doing that. I think that I don't like to talk about it a whole lot. Like you said, I was there for it. I think that if the Blind Side story helps people out, then that's great. If it inspires anyone, that's awesome. If it doesn't, that's okay too. You know, it's given me and us a little bit of a platform to do some good things with, and that's exciting. I think my parents do a really, really good job with kids in and around Memphis that are falling through the cracks, whether it's the elementary schools they're involved with or after school programs. And that's awesome. And we get to help out now. And that's because probably a little bit of that platform was from the movie. So there's good things that come from it. And if people choose not to like it or make fun of it, I'm good with that too, because I don't love it myself and I like to make fun of it also. So I can play both sides. But you know, I was in fifth grade when it came out, or when it happened in theory in life. So, or fourth grade. So, you know, I don't like necessarily love to see the fourth grade version of myself, you know, put out a lot when it came out. I was a sophomore in high school when it came out. So neither one of those years were like exceptionally awesome for me, but it's fine. I mean, it is what it is.
Well, one last movie, or I guess question, just kind of around that movie, just kind of end on a funny note here. How's it feel to have Tim McGraw and Sandra Bullock as parents there?
You would be shocked. I mean, I know you say it jokingly, but you would be shocked if people were like, oh, like, so Sandra Bullock is your mom. And I think that they're joking. And like, oh my gosh, you really mean that. It's a distinction for people to make sometimes. No, I mean,
that's interesting.
It's fine. It's funny that everyone always says like, oh, well, your boy didn't like this movie, or you're so-and-so don't like this movie. I'm like, yeah, I mean, I get played by Jay Head, who I like. He's a nice guy. But at the time, Jay's, you know, a little shrimpy kid, and he looks kind of scrawny. And Mike gets played by this Quentin Aaron guy at the time. the movie comes out, Mike's in the NFL, he's like 10%, like 8% body fat. You know, it looks great. And all of a sudden he goes back to when he's 16. You know, he doesn't talk at all. And my mom gets an Oscar-winning actress who people like think is one of the greatest, you know, looking actresses of all time. And my dad gets Tim McGraw, who's like six-pack, this famous country. I mean, yeah, of course it looks better for them, right? I mean, everyone would like the movie
sure.
if those guys played you. So it's a little harder for us supporting roles there. But no, I mean, it is what it is. Like I said, if people like it, that's good. If they don't, then I'm also good with that.
That's cool. I'm glad to hear that your family's been able to use that platform in definite ways, and they're certainly reaching out in the community. That's really positive to hear.
Yeah, they do. They do some good. I don't give them enough credit. I think yeah. I poke fun at my mom's Instagram more than I should. She's gotten a little too into social media since this whole outbreak has happened. I need to put some limits on her phone. But she does. She's doing some good work, and I learned about it from my other friends who follow her because I can't follow her anymore after all the posts. But apparently, she's doing some good stuff. So.
Good.
So, you know, and I think you kind of mentioned this too. Did the movie really bring attention to where your mom and dad can get some additional benefits, you know, I don't know, through any kind of means, public resources, whatever it may be, to really help out and further the causes that they've been doing up before the movie ever came out?
Yeah, I think so. I think that the funny thing about, you know, the movie and Mike's stuff, I mean, my parents were very involved in helping a lot of folks before, which is why I didn't think it was a crazy deal when Mike – that's the number one question I think I get is, right, like, did the car wreck happen and was it weird when Mike moved into your house? And it really wasn't weird because that's how we grew up. Hmm. So I just thought it was no thing. Now, obviously, Mike became part of our family and, you know, that was a completely different deal. But to me, it wasn't anything out of kind of something we did a lot. I say that – not I mean, not to that extent, obviously, but – it wasn't weird when someone came home to get some help and tutoring or to do this or to do that. It was weird when you moved into my room and had to share the room for a couple of years. That part was weird. but yeah, I think now that they have a foundation that I'm on the board of called the Making It Happen Foundation, and they do some really good stuff. So sure, I think to put it in the light a little bit, you'd like to think that that would have happened, but maybe probably not. I mean, I'm not naive enough to think that didn't give them a platform, and Leanne got on like some, you know, Extreme Home Makeover show after that, and she was doing stuff. So sure, I mean, I think that it definitely bolstered that platform for them a little bit, but it wasn't crazy uncommon, you know, to see them helping out folks. I played AU basketball till I was 14 or 15. I didn't have any other white friends. You know, I was like the one. I was called Spot. I got sweatshirt with Spot on it. Because on the team pictures, I was the only white kid in the photos. So to me, everyone's like, "Oh, it must have been so weird what we did." I was like, "No, honestly, like it's kind of what we did." Yes, to answer your question shortly, sure, it gave them a bigger platform because you'd be stupid not to use that, I guess, to try to make a positive difference.
Sure. Sure. Well, hey, before we split, because we definitely appreciated having you on the show. Considering, let's just say that COVID isn't even a thing at this
sure.
point. If we get all of our freedom back this summer, what's like one big thing you're looking forward to doing?
Man, I just want to go golf. I want to get out and go on a golf trip somewhere. I suck at golf, which is why I like to go. But
you're my hero. I am horrible too, and I want to go play right now.
I've been playing a ton.
I think we have the making of a foursome coming up. If you just want to toss in the clubs, we'll all just go play somewhere.
Oh, I'm not too far away. We'll make it happen.
No.
I got a bunch of buddies from back home that and we like to go on a golf. And that's kind of the fun thing about working in this football industry, man, is I have friends at Arkansas and at SMU and Dallas. And, you know, it's fun to meet those guys somewhere in the middle and play some golf and at least take, you know, them beat me and me try to keep up for a weekend. So that'd be the number one thing, man, that and the beach. And if I can do both those together, even better.
Hey, it sounds like a perfect weekend to do.
Absolutely.
Oh, man. Well, SJ, we really appreciate you taking some time out of your busy schedule coming on. Certainly wish you well in the upcoming preparation for the football season, whatever that looks like. Also on your doctoral work. Hope that things go well with that as well.
Man, I appreciate it. Thank you guys for having me on.
Right. Well, again, thanks, SJ. We are going to go ahead and drop the checkered flag. I'll go ahead and wrap up for the evening. So final thoughts for the night. Matt, what's on your mind?
Well, now he's got me thinking about going to play golf if we can get out and do that. Yeah. And, You know, I took advantage of the Under Armour sales before they started closing all their stores down after, or what was that, around Black Friday or something. So my golf attire, whether I fit into it after this COVID 20 pounder or what, I'm definitely excited.
Yeah, I got to say, there's a driving range about 2 miles from my house, and it is packed every day, which is kind of crazy. But it makes me want to go out there and just at least hit some balls, try to get back into the swing of things, like what I did there, swing of things. So, yeah, golfing does sound really fun, and just getting back outside. It rained a bunch the past couple days, so just getting back outside, moving around a little bit would be nice. But, yeah, golf. And, again, hope everybody else out there staying safe, staying healthy.
And staying
sane in this quarantine, but and thanks, guys. We are gonna head out.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. If you'd like to have your sports related question or comment featured on the show, please email us at sportstalkgarage@gmail.com. Also, if you want to keep up to date with us outside of the show, please follow us on Twitter at sportsgaragepod. If you enjoyed the show, please drop us a 5-star review and subscribe if you want to hear more. So for Chris back in the studio, David and Matt, I'm John, and we are the Sports Talk Garage.